I can tell you a little bit about Dr. Pollack. Yeah, Dr. Howard Pollack is a practicing dentist and full-time clinical professor in the School of Dentistry at the University of California, San Francisco. Dr. Pollack has received the Excellence in Clinical Teaching Award from the graduating dental class and a Distinguished Faculty Member Award from the Northern California section of the American College of Dentists. For HPHA, he served as many years in many capacities, but most recently as the chair of the oral health section and as a governing counselor. So, Dr. Pollack.
Thank you for that very warm welcome. nice to see some familiar faces and some new faces. It's good to be here in New Orleans. I've been tasked with discussing a sort of a dental materials presentation that is not my area of particular expertise, but from a dental public health point of view, this is an important topic. So the title is, How Did We Get to Where We Are with Restoring Carious Teeth? And I'm just going to put my timer on just to see how long it takes me. So unfortunately, I don't have any relationships to disclose. I'm not going to go over the material that's already in the abstract to reduce the time of the presentation. That's available to you online and in your, online at APHA annual meeting materials. So, dental caries is the problem. Although we've done a lot to reduce the burden of disease, it's still a very ongoing problem. We're dealing with primary teeth, we're dealing with permanent teeth, we're dealing with the different surfaces of the crowns of teeth, pit and fissure, aproximal, the ones that come up against each other, and the smooth surfaces, the ones that you actually clean when you're brushing your teeth. And then as we age, more and more of our roots become exposed to tooth decay, and they're more prone to tooth decay. They're not covered by enamel. We're dealing with tissues of the tooth, the enamel, the dentine underneath that, and the pulp tissue. And you can see on these photographs here, caries in the primary dentition, caries on the root surface, and a crown that's been placed to restore this premolar. You can see amalgam in this occlusal surface of a molar, and there's a buildup material after a root canal treatment. You also see a white spot on that aproximal surface that you would not normally see because the adjacent tooth would have covered that. You see an extracted tooth with extensive root caries there. Of course, you may or may not have pain associated with tooth decay. It's an infective process that goes from the outside of the tooth towards the pulp. And when it's infecting the pulp and killing off that tissue, you get pulpal necrosis leading to an abscess that's beyond the tooth, between the tooth and the bone. And that can also lead to more systemic kinds of septicemias and brain abscesses. And if untreated appropriately, if it's not treated appropriately, death can ensue. It can be fatal. It's a very serious disease. We're talking about the restoration of the tooth after it's been destroyed by tooth decay. And for this presentation, I'm not going to be talking about root canal treatments, but that's a possibility, as well as extraction of a tooth and replacement with either an implant or a bridge or a partial removable denture. And there's considerable cost in the United States. Over $100 billion each year is spent by consumers and insurance companies on treatment of dental caries. Not all tooth decay needs to be restored. There's a gradual shift between no decay and obvious clinical decay where there's a need for restoration. And you should know that community water fluoridation and fluoride toothpaste has produced this incremental benefit every year of about a half a tooth surface saved on a permanent tooth, which amounts to, over a 50-year period, 25 tooth surfaces that would have otherwise become decayed if you don't use the fluoride toothpaste and if you don't live in a fluoridated community. So these are the surfaces of the posterior teeth that I'm going to talk about. I'm not going to talk about the restoration of anterior teeth, although amalgam is used on the lingual pits of the maxillary lateral incisors oftentimes, but more these days there's a lot more composites. So we're dealing with occlusal pits and fissures that you can't really prevent caries by brushing, and proximal caries that you won't be able to clean those surfaces of the teeth with your toothbrush. You have to use floss, and of course fluoride has a role to play. A breakthrough came in 1955 when Bonacore decided to do something heretical, that was to apply acid to a pit and fissure, which would have removed the minerals from the surface of the tooth, leaving it porous and susceptible to bonding. And now we have sealants that are increasing in use, and Healthy People 2020 recommends increasing the level for all children to have sealants where indicated. Well, sealed teeth can arrest caries, so you avoid the need to provide local anesthesia, an injection, and drilling and filling, and so this is a very important technique. Another breakthrough came in 1963 when Bowen developed a new dental material. It was the beginning of the dental composite revolution, and it has revolutionized what we do to teeth so that we can make teeth much more aesthetic, and this has become a very popular technique. There's been many advances in dental composites over the years, and we'll talk a little bit about that. So here you can see pictures of amalgam fillings in molar and premolar. This is a crown, porcelain probably bonded to metal underneath there, but not necessarily. This is a crown, a portion of a crown where you see a metal occlusal and lingual surface and the buccal surface in porcelain. Stainless steel crowns are used in deciduous teeth to prevent the further breakdown of those teeth from caries. Old amalgams can be replaced with composites, and on the slides here you can barely distinguish the composite from the tooth. And certainly I know when I'm providing this service to patients because they want it or because there's recurrent decay requiring it, and I show them in a mirror after the treatment, invariably they'll say, wow. So composites are a really nice procedure to be able to restore teeth almost ideally. What does it cost? Well, the average fee for a dental amalgam on a one surface in the United States is $125, and you can pay up to $300 for a composite on a four surface restoration on a single tooth. Composites in general are about 35% higher in cost than amalgams, and a sealant is a valuable service. To seal one or two surfaces on a tooth, depending if it's pitted or fissured, and at a fee of about $50. A crown is approximately $1,000 that you can pay more, you can pay less, depending on your area of the country and what your particular dentist charges. What are the advantages of composites and the disadvantages of them? So it's the most aesthetic material, it's durable. You do have to etch the tooth by itself. If you put composite into a prepared cavity, it's not going to last very long without bonding. Most of them harden with a light. It's a blue light. That's why the sky is blue. That's what I tell my patients. Why is the sky blue? It's the wavelength of light that penetrates the most. And so it penetrates through that composite as you build it up incrementally into the cavity. There are disadvantages with composites. Rubber dam is highly preferred. I always use rubber dam when I'm doing composites. It is subject to microleakage if you don't bond it all the way around the cavity. And it's the most technique sensitive to achieve lasting results. It's not in itself bacteriostatic. It has to be sealed. And it does, some of them do contain bisphenol A, which is of concern in the environment. And to humans. So it's also not suitable for root surfaces, particularly because it doesn't bond that well to dentine. There is no enamel on the root surfaces. Glass ionomer is another material. doesn't require rubber dam, often can be used in areas where you can't apply rubber dam. There's no need for a bonding agent. It's an acid-base reaction, so it doesn't cause shrinkage. It contains and releases fluoride, which can be recharged with fluoride toothpaste. So you rarely see caries on the periphery of a glass ionomer material. It doesn't wear as well as composites. It's not suitable for biking surfaces, and it's not as aesthetic as composites, although those glass ionomers are improving in aesthetics. Dental amalgam, a metal material. Older dentists have more experience with it, I being one of the older dentists. It can be used for both crowns and root caries. It is cost-effective compared to the other materials, and it does minimize recurrent decay because of the breakdown products between the amalgam and the prepared surface of the tooth in the cavity being a bacteriostatic breakdown product. It requires additional tooth removal for retention and fracture resistance. It's not aesthetic. And you can actually bond amalgam. In fact, Mike Stelenek at UCSF has demonstrated you can have amalgam sealants. When you apply, first of all, the etching and the bonding and then put amalgam in there, the amalgam will stay. So you can always bond amalgam. What is amalgam? About half of the amalgam is mercury, triturated or in an amalgamator, a powdered alloy that's got silver, tin, zinc, and perhaps copper in it. And this is the essential equation where you've got this gamma phase of a silver-tin compound, adding mercury, mixing it up, and you produce a compound of silver and mercury, tin and mercury, and the original gamma phase. Now, composite is a very large molecule of carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. I tell my patients it's a mixture of epoxy and acrylic. So it does contain bis-GMA usually, but there are other dimethacrylate monomers. It's filled with crushed glass and silica, so it is wear resistant. Camphorquinone is often used to be split by the light to act as a catalyst, and there are other materials that are added for workability. Glass ionomer is a mixture of glass and organic material, and it's more tooth-like in material because it's got some calcium, it's got fluoride, it's got phosphate, and the liquid is a polyacrylic acid or other kinds of acids, and you do get this release of fluoride, particularly with some of the newer products like Fuji 9 Extra, which is a really nice material to work with when you're doing root caries restorations. So the history of dental amalgam goes back centuries to China in the 7th century, and in England it was known as Bell's putty. It was like a putty-like material that you condense into the cavity. And there were people dentists who were in support of the use of amalgam and those that were against the use of amalgam, leading to what we call the amalgam war in the mid-1800s. The preference was for gold after the gold rush, and Flagg produced this document in 1881, called Plastic and Plastic Fillings, saying that amalgam was an excellent filling material. But the manipulation of the material, tooth preparation techniques were very important. G.V. Back produced his particular formulation that he called a scientifically balanced alloy. 1931 was a very important year in the history of dentistry. It was also the year not only that the National Bureau of Standards got involved with studying amalgam, but that was the first time that fluoride was able to be measured in very low concentrations and identified as the cause of tooth mottling. Over the years, we've had improved formulations of amalgam. Homeopathic physicians have been amalgam opponents. In 100 years, in the 20th century, there were only 41 reported cases of allergy to any of the components of amalgam, not always the mercury portion. The mercury vapor in the mouth after the restoration is placed is at a very low threshold, and toxicity can occur from mixing it in the hand, as was done by an individual dental assistant over 20 years who died from mercury poisoning. And so in the 1970s, we had mercury hygiene guidelines, and the amanti amalgamists have become quite vocal since the 1980s, led by Dr. Hal Huggins from Colorado. Cast gold inlays and onlays and crowns are excellent in terms of durability. They don't have anything inherent in terms of their ability to prevent further caries or secondary caries. They're cemented to the repaired tooth. And I had to do a gold foil for passing the California licensing exam the last time I did a gold foil, and half the teeth with gold foils died because you had to pound this stuff and you got pulpal trauma. Porcelain is increasing its use with the CAD-CAM process. It's a two-visit procedure, unless you want to keep the patient in the chair for a long time. And they're excellent aesthetics, but difficult to match to teeth. Not always recommended because they can be brittle. So one dentist looked at his patients over a 17-year period and concluded that, on average, amalgams lasted about 13 years, and composites lasted about 8 years, and crowns about 15 years. I want to talk a little bit about the Cassiopeia trial in Lisbon, Portugal, over a 10-year period that concluded that there was, first of all, considerable background mercury exposure unrelated to dental amalgam because of the Portuguese fish diet. There was no significant differences in neurobehavioral assessments, and after 5 years of initial treatment, the need for additional restorative treatment was about 50% higher in the composite group. The New England trial occurred in the same time period, and again with children randomized between amalgam and resin composite materials. Again, there was no significant difference in physical development over the 5 years, and they were only able to follow the wearability, durability of the restorations over a 3-year period and didn't find any statistical difference between amalgams and composites. A Cochrane review in 2014 found, as they usually do, low quality evidence suggesting that composites lead to higher failure rates than amalgams, but it did support the benefit of amalgams, particularly in parts of the world where they are still a material of choice. Insufficient evidence to support or refute any adverse effects with amalgam or composites. Another analysis published this year in the Journal of Dental Research looked at 2,800 composites, finding only 2% failure every year. 1 in 50 restorations failed every year over a 10-year period. Most of them failed because of caries or fracture. In the period between 1984 and 2005, the number of amalgams has halved, essentially, from 100 million in 84 to 52 million in 2005. Your chances in 2005 of needing an amalgam was 1 in 6, composites 1 in 4, and 1 in 8 people needed a crown. And composites comprised almost 50% of posterior restorations, amalgams about a third, and the rest crowns. 1 in 7 dental offices had poor dental mercury hygiene practices in 1968. I mentioned the death of the dental assistant in 1970. OSHA got involved in protecting employees, ADA guidelines in terms of personal monitoring, capsules, etc., were developed in the 70s and 80s. And then in 84, it was found that the evidence was lacking in terms of concern about mercury exposure in the dental office, and advised against replacement of amalgams. And consumer reports said, watch your wallet if your dentist is trying to encourage you to get your amalgams taken out. And the amalgams were considered safe in 2005 by the ADA. So when is mercury released? It's during the placement and removal of amalgams, so have a rubber dam placed to prevent it going down the throat or on your tongue, and minimal after placement or during function. There are corrosion products that have a role to play in patients who have oral lichen planus. EPA now has released, on September 25th of this year, a proposed standard to reduce mercury discharges from dental offices into wastewater. Composites are not without their biological risks in terms of estrogenicity, cytotoxicity, and allergenicity. In fact, they are more likely to cause allergies than amalgam or mercury. It's not always the material, but often the technique that determines short and long-term success. New amalgams with a good technique are far superior to old amalgams with a poor technique. So what is the ideal dental restorative material? It should be aesthetic and color stable, durable, low cost, easy to place, biocompatible not only for the tooth, but for patients and the dental personnel and the environment. Thank you very much.